Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Please join us today as everyone's voice matters. We have a problem in the U.S. with long-time and long-term and permanent damages which have occurred within the penal system with incarcerated individuals being treated and botched up surgeries. Kelly Donahue is only one of thousands of incarcerated individuals whom we all know has been a subject of the injustices occurring in a country focused on greed, power, fame, revenge, and retaliation. It is for this reason that many of us advocate for prison reform and an end to cruel and harsh sentencing and treatment. So I'm going to introduce you as of now to Kelly Donahue, who is going to tell you a little bit about himself and go on to talk about his issues. And I hope everyone will listen and maybe call in. If not today, at least try to get more involved in some of these issues that is being discussed. Kelly, do you want to let the audience know your name and tell them a little bit about yourself?
All right. Well, like you said, my name is Kelly Donahue, but I grew up by Sampson. I'm 50 years old. Well, I will be next month. And I'm incarcerated here in Pennsylvania. Frankville, Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact. And like you were saying, we'll go ahead and touch on that subject first about the medical and the neglect and the mistreatment and so forth of that, right? So about a year or so ago, I went down and had to go back to court to take care of some charges that I had that I came back on a violation for. And while I was there, they put me on this block that everybody had COVID. So, of course, I ended up catching COVID. And this is during the Delta wave. And they put me in a cell with this guy. He tested positive and left me in there for 12 days. They took care of him but didn't take care of me. So I ended up with something on top of that, some sort of parasite or something. So it caused an intestinal problem. It caused internal bleeding. And they didn't want to do anything about it at the county jail. I was done with everything I was supposed to do within like 4 days of being there, but they kept me for another 30 days because they wanted me to test negative for COVID before I came back, even though I was supposedly already negative, right? So I was trying to find attorneys to help me out with the situation, and I was also, you know, decided to write some of my senators here in Pennsylvania. So I wrote Katie Muth, I wrote Camara Barletta, Lisa Baker, who was the chair, and Sharif Street, right? So I want to read this letter that I sent to them. This is how it goes, and it pertains to what we're talking about here. So I said, my name is Kelly B. Donahue. I also go by Samson. I prefer
this. Is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
So I am writing in regards to the total disregard to and for the lives of those that both reside and or work here at SCI Brackville, where I am currently incarcerated. Our superintendent is Kathy Britton. She seems to be trying to kill everyone within these walls via COVID-19, Delta, Omicron, which is intentional and has occurred on more than one occasion. First time being around October of 2020 when 40 inmates from Dallas, SCI Dallas, were transferred here just 1 week after 800 plus inmates there and their staff in Dallas had contracted COVID-19. That time, there were no COVID cases here in Frankville whatsoever. So, Frankville wasn't receiving any of that federal pandemic relief money, as there wasn't any COVID virus. So, the powers that be, i.e., Wetzel, Britton, Central Office, etc., decided to import the virus there to receive these funds. So, as of December 2020, I was employed at SCI Frankville Food Services, which is the kitchen, which was and still is subpar in cleanliness, food quality, meat and calorie and serving portion standards, and overall safety of employees, i.e. staff are putting food trays on filthy bread racks from Bimbo Bakery, which are not for culinary use and far from sanitary. Staff are also doubling as medical staff, still are. Food services staff were taking every inmate's temperature before leaving the block and were given the authority to determine who is or who isn't sick or fit for duty. Idiotic and dangerous. On more than one occasion, my temp, this is no kid, was said to be 93.7 and 95.8, which is, if it's correct, means I was dead. Myself and others in the kitchen, you know, the cohort, we had like seven or eight of us that were in a cohort.
This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Exhibited symptoms of COVID. We told food service staff this, and they said that if you don't have a fever, you don't have COVID. Sometime in the middle of 2021, there was a prison-wide shakedown. Search authority shortly after we had another outbreak of COVID, and we were locked down for a few months from August to September 2021. And I was sent to Dauphin County Prison. This is where all this happens to me with the virus down there, for the plea and sentencing, at which time I was subjected to the atrocities that will make your skin crawl, i.e. I was put on a block, an intake block, in the middle of a wave of Delta, variant. Multiple inmates were positive for the virus, and they were left on the block to mingle with the rest of the people on the block for a week. And by then, the entire Dauphin County Prison was overrun with the virus. The cells did not have air circulation whatsoever, and the ones that I was put in, 817, was covered in feces, rust, filth, etc. My cellmate, like I said, he tested positive, right? Then we went through the whole thing with the recreational cleaning supplies. We were denied. We were wore the same prison uniform for 16 days straight. The same thing with the sheets, towels, and pillowcases for 16 days. When we were allowed to shower, I was forced to shower naked and with then my 65-year-old cellmate. And the staff jeered and made lewd comments about it. Then I was finally sent back to SCI Prattville, and at the end of September 2021, I was put back to work. Well, in the food services, and I was still exhibiting symptoms of COVID, some of which were incapacitating. You know, I had explosive diarrhea, internal bleeding, so on and so forth. So on October 8, 2021, I was too ill to go to work. Food service staff promptly issued me a misconduct, put me in a sick call. I put in a sick call slip the day I got sick, but I was sent back. It was sent back by the PA Bosley. And by the way, she'd been fired, and it had something to do with this. Supposedly due to me not being having a sign, there was two signature signs. One was just for, you know, hey, what's wrong with you? The other side was for a cash slip. They decided it was a cash slip, was not signed. So that's why she sent it back, right? Because I didn't sign that before I went down. So I was basically being manipulated into signing the cash slip as extortion. Well, meanwhile, I was found guilty for refusing to work. The hearing examiner refused to talk to the medical department to verify my ailments. I appealed, and it was overturned and promptly rewrote. This time, the hearing examiner had the nerve to tell me that instead of me signing up for sick call, I should have went to work at that time, and food services would have determined if I was sick or not, right? So I asked her, I said, well, if that's the case, then what? If there's something wrong with me, then maintenance is going to do the surgery, right? Well, she didn't much care for that. So I appealed, and inmate employment, what's her name? Dvorsky was her name. She was a part of the PRC. O'Mara, she was a PREA coordinator, and Mr. Elsie, he was activities department. So they reviewed my appeal. They upheld the misconduct. Kathy Britton followed suit. And they both said, well, they all said that I should have went to work first and let them determine if something's wrong. So if I have COVID, so I'm taking it down here to work and spreading it to the other people that are down there while you're determining if something's wrong with me, right? Which we didn't know what exactly the problem was. So, and I am told to this day I'm still waiting on the appeal for final response. It's been over a year. I wrote grievances and everything, and they said I can't write grievances about that. Well, anyhow, inmates are burned out. There's been a rash of violence in between staff and inmates, which supposedly made, you know, Kathy Britton decide to do another shakedown to retaliate. Irritate any and all involved even further. So in December of 2021, we had two shakedowns. And the second of said shakedowns were on the authority of Secretary George M. Little. We had a new Secretary of Prisons. So during the apex of the Omicron wave, CERT came from all over the state, wrecked all of our cells, and contaminated the entire prison with this virus. This was all done deliberately, again. And I've had every flavor of this virus. And for whatever reason, it was done deliberately. I'm being punished for getting sick. So this misconduct that I got caused me to be turned down for parole for another year. So I lost my job, I lost pay, I lost my freedom. And my cause to be denied parole has now caused me to require surgery, which I did have done. And it took like three instances to finally get that done. And as a matter of fact, I just went out yesterday to have the follow-up for that and found out that because of the staff here not treating my wound completely and giving me antibiotics, it ended up getting infected. So it healed over the infection, caused an abscess that ended up breaking through. And then I had to go back to the doctor, and they said that it could be something called a fistula, which is that's a hole that goes straight from the outside. It could go the whole way into your abdomen and into your intestines. And she said, if that's the case, then I'd have to have another surgery done. So go on and say that, needless to say, that having, you know, medical staff, you know, acting, or having food service staff acting as medical staff is about as crazy as an elevator in an outhouse. So I said, you may not care, and this is what I'm saying to these people. that I wrote, what happens to me or anyone else here, but the impact on society and taxpayers, because it impacts the taxpayers of society to do what you will. And that's not my name. And like I said, ones that I sent that to were Senators Katie Booth, Maribel Barletta, Lisa Baker, and Sharice Street. And to this day, still never heard nothing back from him. I even wrote the governor. He doesn't care either. He never responded. He's on his way out anyhow, so. And that's where I'm at with that.
Kelly, I thank you. You know, one of the things is Kelly is speaking really fast, Samson, because he only has a short time to get his information out to you. And unfortunately, there's a lot that's been going on with him. And this is an issue that we have to look at in this criminal justice system that everyone is talking about reforming is the medical. We have a lot of these contracted agencies, and Kelly has been trying to find out the name of the contracted agency at his facility, the contracted medical providers, and he has not yet been able to get that information. Kelly, you have some more time, and I know you have to talk fast to get it all out. So why don't you say anything else you want to say about your situation?
All right. Well, you always like to have me talk about my past and, you know, my mom and my dad and all that stuff. So this is actually something that I touched base with when I wrote Governor Wolf. And I wrote him on January 15th, 2021. And that was my oldest son's birthday. That's how it starts out. So Governor Wolf, today is my oldest son's birthday. He is 30 years old today, and I haven't seen him since he was 7 years old. I have two other sons. They're Samson and Hercules, their name. They're 21 and 22. I haven't seen them since they were 2 and 3. That I've lost my mom, two uncles to lung cancer, both of my grandparents and grandfather to heart disease, my aunt to MS, multiple sclerosis, and I've lost my dad, my brother, a cousin, and a good friend all to suicide. And I've spent the last 33 years behind bars. At least 21 of that was for crimes I did not commit. I do have a good woman. Her name, her and her one-eyed dog out there in the world. I love them, and they both love me. And I've got two new friends that I made while on parole, which are John and Joey. They live right up the road here. They're 85 and 65. Their last name was Wog. And unfortunately, Joey just passed away last year. And then I said I made while I was on parole. And I've also got an elder lady friend up in Massachusetts, which is you. You know, that's what everybody knows that. And she's been my friend for over 10 years now because of her son, JD. So then I go on to say, I used to have 35 acres of land that had been in my family since 1876 up in Lucasburg, Clearfield County, PA. So while I was doing 5 months in the county jail for my first offense, DUI, that should have been for 2 days, someone took it upon themselves to burn it to the ground for fun, I guess. They never did find out who was to burn it down. They even tried to blame me for that, and I was in the county jail whenever that happened. So not long after my arrest and railroading back in 2002, someone stole my truck. Nothing was done about that. I guess because I had I was in the middle of a lawsuit with the Pennsylvania State Police for beating the holy hell out of me when they arrested me. Yes, and I lost that cause. The Pennsylvania State Police had this thing called qualified immunity, which is also something that's under scrutiny today. You know, there's only so much that you can be qualified.
You have 1 minute left.
And so out of the last 21 years that I was in prison, I spent 3.5 years out. And I keep coming back for dumb violations, like unsworn falsifications to authorities, or moving and not changing my address with my parole officer, so on and so forth. And every time I do come back, it's for like 3 years, 3.5 years, something that normal people wouldn't even get locked up for in the first place. And that's how screwed up and corrupt the system still is to this day. And I got about 30 seconds left. So I thank you guys for listening, and I appreciate the in-house therapy. And if anybody decides that they want to contact me, just put my name on there, SCI Fragville, VADOC, and it's PO Box 33028, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33733. And I guess that's all I got for today. Thanks for
And Kelly, I'm glad that you were able to get that story out. I feel really bad. And again,
thank you for using
Kelly.
Sure.
You take care.
Goodbye.
Sometimes we don't understand the situations that most people are in. We all go through something, and I'm sure all of you listening have also gone through some kind of tragedy or some kind of hardships that a lot of people don't see and don't know about. Sometimes we focus so much on our own sadness, our own situations, that we fail to realize that there are people out in the communities and behind the prison walls, in the nursing homes, the homeless shelters, the streets, the hospitals, even in churches, that are going through so, so much. We need to look around and we need to listen closely to what people are trying to say, because prisons are so full of people that had no support when they were going through some serious situation. They needed that support and no one was there. But yet, when they stumbled, when they ended up in prison, everybody has so much to say about the individuals. We also have to look at the medical treatment that's being provided in the prisons across the country. The DOC, Department of Corrections around the country, are hiring people. They're contracting with medical providers, many of whom are not even experienced, many of whom do not have the license to practice in certain areas, many of whom are operating on individuals incarcerated and causing permanent damage. And Kelly was one example of what's happened. He's going back for surgery again because they failed the first surgery without the treatment, and he ended up getting an infection. Social media has been posting all kinds of pictures of individuals who went in incarcerated, healthy looking, and some of them now the bones are showing. Some of them now have scars all over them from surgeries, botched surgeries. We have an organization in Massachusetts called Families and Friends for the Mentally Ill. And that is run and founded by Donna Winant. Donna has been in her committee, her team has been working very closely with medical providers outside the prison system. They have been working on trying to get independent medical providers to start going into the prisons instead of having these contracted agencies, contracted medical providers that the DOC, Department of Corrections around the country, are saving a lot of money in hiring, but they're also spending a lot of time hiring people who are causing permanent damage or death to others incarcerated. We have to look at these incarcerated individuals who are also human beings. And many of them, as healthy as they may have been at one time, and Kelly is one, and I can name a few others, some who are in wheelchairs now, some who could hardly walk now, some who have had to alter the way in which they walk, some of them who are permanently damaged in other ways. And Donna Winant, as I say, and she will be on the show in another week or two, but they have been doing an awesome job in trying to bring in independent providers. And I'm sure the DOC, Department of Corrections, around the country are going to try to avoid these things happening, because it's going to show their flaws when people are being operated on successfully, when people are receiving the appropriate treatment that they deserve. It's going to let the public know about the flaws, the inappropriate treatment and conditions within the penal system. It's unfortunate that we have to, in contrast to all other countries around the world, we have to look like the bad guys, because our penal system, 2.3 million people in prisons and jails, overwhelmingly outdoes any other country in the world. The sentences handed down to wrongfully convicted, the first-time offenders, life and life without parole sentences, is exactly the same as they give out to terrorists and serial killers. What's that all about? They talk about prison for profits. Prisons for profit is exactly what's happening, because not only are they hiring cheap labor with some of these contracted medical providers, but they're making it impossible for prisoners, the incarcerated population, to purchase anything outside the penal system. Everything has to be purchased inside. Everything has to be purchased in-house. phone calls to contracted providers, Securus, Globaltel, emails to Securus, videos being charged when people have video visits with their loved ones. Many of us haven't seen our loved ones for years. We depend on those phone calls and periodic letters. But then what's happening as well with the letters is, many of you know, the mail gets tampered with. These incarcerated individuals are not receiving their mail half the time. And then they only allow them to have so many pages in an envelope. Some states allow five. Some prisons allow five pages. Some prisons allow 11 pages. And then when you put your letters in the envelope, you have to fold the envelopes, fold the letters into a half an inch or an inch as you fold them. Because when they open the letters with their knife or whatever they use to open the letters, half the time or three quarters of the time, they cut right into the letters. The letters are torn when they do get them. There have been maps sent to the incarcerated population. Sports magazines, gymnastic, weightlifting, religious. Some prisoners don't even receive them. They get thrown in the trash. They get tampered with. They get destroyed. People are sending, having books sent right from the factories, right from the bookstores. And a lot of prisoners are not getting those books. These are major issues, because what they're doing is taking away every right the incarcerated population has to purchase books, magazines, supportive footwear, medical equipment or medical stockings or whatever the case may be from an accredited store. A lot of times after surgery, some of the medical providers even recommend that these people be allowed to purchase from a retail store, accredited retail store. Because as we all know, prison shoes attributes and contributes to all the problems of these prisoners. As many of you know who have probably tried to purchase from their stores at Christmas time or holidays, you're paying three times the amount that you would pay for things that you could buy in a dollar store. Because what they're selling for people to buy for their loved ones around the holidays is ridiculously priced. Candy bars. Tuna fish in a package, a small little package. I would never buy stuff like that from any prison, from any Department of Corrections around the country. I hate to say it, but my loved one goes without because I would not purchase. And many of you who do purchase, you're only giving way to their manipulation because it will continue to go on. In order to buy anything for your loved ones, in order to give them anything, it will always have to come from the prison. And when it comes from the prisons around the country, they're charging outrageous prices for selling things that you can buy in dollar stores for $1 or $2. I know that everyone wants to help their loved ones, but they also have to realize by helping your loved ones, you're hurting them more. Prisons for profit didn't just come along today. It came along a long time ago when people started sending outrageous amounts of money to their loved ones. Then you saw that there was no longer a need for them to have free haircuts, free medical, free this and free that. Because now if they have it, they have to pay. And they pay big time. And I have to say, in many cases, it's not the prisoners themselves suffering. It's the family members who are suffering. And then I want to go back, too, to the drugs that are being brought in, smuggled into the prison by staff. A lot of people have been put on drugs to sell. A lot of people are already in for drugs. They're not getting the help they need. They're getting worse. So for many of you, who think these people incarcerated were incarcerated because of substances. That may be the truth. They were incarcerated because of substance abuse and issues that they did when they were under the influence, which only means they should have been put in long-term residential treatment facilities for substance abuse. The epidemic we have in this country for mental health, mental illnesses, many people put in prison for mental illnesses, for crimes committed while they were mentally disturbed, emotionally dysfunctional. Instead of being put in prison, they should be put in long-term residential treatment facilities. I'm going to bring up a fact again that I keep bringing up, is that I started a petition on change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. I can't imagine any family feeling bad about their loved ones being in prison that would not sign a petition like that, because I'd rather see the people getting the treatment. Maybe they're not mentally disturbed. Maybe they were emotionally dysfunctional at the time of their crime. Maybe many of them not having access to drugs or alcohol now, but they still are, because we have overseers that are making money, hence prisons for profit. Replacing prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities is giving all of your loved ones a chance to be really, really, really rehabilitated, not just in word and alone, but in word and deed. Long-term residential treatment facilities will definitely get the oversight, because they will be under a 501c3, 4, or whatever it takes to get these facilities up and running. They will have oversight. Whereas the Department of Corrections around the country, they do not have that oversight. They have a large, powerful union that everyone seems to fear, including our legislative members. This country is going to be so overruled with corporations, with unions, with everyone that's against justice. And you're going to find you will not have the help at all. Your loved ones will be worse off than they were when they went in, because you chose, or someone chose, not to want to sign a petition to end prison, but to start rehabilitation in long-term residential treatment facilities, more humane than any penal system. If it's working in Europe, and it's working in other countries, the maximum sentencing of 25 years, the facilities not being made of steel and cold cement and iron bars, but more humane, programs offered to everyone. In this country, people are targeted and they're denied opportunities to participate in any kind of programs, because the Department of Corrections' intention is to prevent that person or those people from ever having a chance at rehabilitation by not having anything to show for all the years they've been in prison. Corrupt lawyers who refuse to help people they know need help, refusing to help people that need their help, and they know that that person's human rights are violated, or that person's civil rights are violated, or that person is going through torment and torture. There are lawyers out there like that. They may have children of their own, but they don't care about others. I am a person of God, and there's plenty out there that are, people out there that are. But if you get lawyers that are corrupt, you get lawyers that side with one another, that don't want to help someone they know needs the help because they don't want to go against their peers or whatever. They're not good lawyers. They're not good lawyers at all. I have emails from a lawyer one time that was so sympathetic of an incarcerated individual that was going through so much. I have numerous emails from her. But apparently she must have talked to one of her peers, because from that moment on, calling her, trying to talk to her was like talking to a two-year-old child, unprofessional, screaming at the top of her lungs. And another lawyer told me maybe she just had a bad day. I called her again. And many of you know Patricia. I won't say her last name. Not right now anyway, but Patricia is a lawyer in Massachusetts. And she sent me so many emails feeling so bad about the individual. She abruptly decided not to help. And this individual was a first-time offender. This individual to this day has never been involved with any kind of drugs or alcohol. This individual was a worker. He was a struggling college student, a child who grew up without a father and worked his way up, struggling to do the best he could. Being taken advantage of by people who had two parents, by people who had financial wealth, people who had everything going for them, and yet racist. Can you believe that racism can be that dysfunctional, that sick, that somebody's going to try to take advantage of a vulnerable person, and then after that person goes to prison for life or life without parole for that first and only offense, they come up with so many lies, they try so hard to discredit that person in so many ways so that he doesn't look like a first-time offender, that he doesn't look like a working, struggling college student. People get the wrong impression sometimes. Words can really make people go way off track in their assumption of someone. Way off track. It's like I say with the author, Casey Sherman. Casey Sherman lied in an article about being friends and double dating with this person who never even hung around with Casey Sherman. They played football together in school, but they never associated outside of school. But Casey, in his sick mind, to get viewers to sell his books, decided he was going to put that in there. And when someone asked him about it, he said, oh, I wasn't talking about him. I was talking about another friend. Well, if you're talking about another friend, then you need to be talking to that friend about writing a book about him. Because this article was not about the other friend. It was about the person that you play football with, that you stated was never in trouble, where you stated was a good person. You stated everything, but you had to put that lie in. And the reason you put that lie in is because the victim also lied on the stand and said the same words almost. He was in a relationship before, which was a lie. And that's why we have so much injustice in this country. Because people like that, they need to be held accountable. The sad thing about it, there's a politician who went to school with that very victim, that very offender who's serving life without. And that person knows Casey Sherman as well. He knows Casey lied in that article. And I'm waiting for the day where he's going to be man enough to speak out about it, to have Casey Sherman redact that article that's making that offender look like he's not credible in what he says. So we have a system, a penal system, that's corrupt, that has caused so many people to be physically damaged permanently, a system that lies to the legislative members and gets away with it. Family and friends who turn their backs on their loved ones, people that they know were good people, but rather than to speak with those people to find out what caused them to stumble, they turn their backs. They turn their backs on someone they once said he is. If he could do it, anyone could do it. That's how good a person he was. And this person, when he did do his crime, he was emotionally disturbed at the time. He was going through a lot. Severe depression can cause somebody to go either way. Suicide or homicide. But I will also say, in the penal system, in the United States of America, this gung-ho country, they wonder why there's so much bullying going on. There's so much bullying going on in the schools because they're seeing it going on with the adults in this country. They are the cause. This country's government and the racist people that live in the communities in this country are the causes, not only of people being stumbled and ending up in prison, but also the causes of their own children growing up with psychological problems because they have bad role models bringing them up, raising them. There's a lot of people in society that at one time had biases towards their peers. And throughout the years, there have been many that have turned their lives around once they have seen what the person that they hated so much was all about. They have seen it. They have become close friends. Young people have more wisdom and sense than the adults these days. But for those who are so racist, who have their children at teenage, as youth, getting assault weapons and going to different places and shooting people up. And then we have judges that dismiss it or slap them on the hand. And that's why we have more and more teenagers out there killing one another and killing mass destruction. Sometimes I can't even blame the kids because it's the adults that I see doing the wrong. Judges slapping somebody on the hand and letting it go at that, or giving very little sentences or dismissing it because the kid cries in court. But judges and lawyers who have daughters, and they automatically will go against the male because girls don't do something wrong. Girls don't cheat and lie and deceive. Girls don't try to use people. And those of you with boys, you know that boys, young men, adolescents, female and male, are capable of doing those kind of things. And everybody's different. Some are so vulnerable that they will be resilient. They will accept anything. They will go along with anything until they can no longer cope, until they have given their hearts, spoken out about their pain and suffering and sorrow, only to find out the one person that they're telling is no different than the ones that hurt them the most. And getting back to the medical treatment in the prisons and the psychological treatment, prisoners are afraid to even go to medical now. They're afraid to go to meet with a psychologist. A lot of them are afraid. Some have even said they're afraid to go because they put them on medication so strong that they walk around like zombies. They've seen people walk around like zombies, and they're vulnerable to the environment around them. We have advocates in this country. We have legislative members in this country. We have families of loved ones in this country, many of whom are trying to do the right thing. But I noticed even with advocates, they could have been signing that same petition that I asked everyone to sign. They claimed to want to abolish the prisons. They claimed to want to abolish life and life without parole. They claim to want to abolish death penalty. They claim to want to abolish solitary confinement. So why aren't they signing it? Because a lot of them don't have investments. A lot of them don't have loved ones inside, but they do get funding for their organizations. That's the problem. Some organizations can start out really, really good until the money starts rolling in. And all of a sudden, the focus changes. They want to see how much money they can get, what they can spend it on. And many of them have been known to spend it on themselves, to spend it on their loved ones. I just want to let everybody know these are issues that need to be talked about, because it's very imperative that people let this absorb and not just keep it in your own ears and mouth. Spread it out there. Get it going viral. Let people come together in unity to start making this country like other countries, reasonable. This is the United States. I don't like to call it America. It was founded maybe with the name America, but it's gone on to United States because it has people from all over the world representing their countries in this country. In every state, there's unity, or should be unity. But yet, we're talking about all this division. All the division that goes on in this country. You know, I have volunteers working with us in my organization. And as I was mentioning with the individual from Germany and the Netherlands that have been advocating for prisoners in this country, we also have a lot of people that I have doing the research for the incarcerated in this country, in the United States. A lot of them are doing the research from their countries, England, Switzerland, Zambia, South Africa. They're doing extensive research for resources for the incarcerated in this country. For those that are being denied educational programs, work programs, we let them know about Criminon International. Criminon International is an organization, global, that helps prisoners. They provide correspondence courses, and the incarcerated individuals even get a certificate at the end of the programs. Your taxpayer dollars are going to the Department of Corrections in the country, and organizations like that are providing free educational and life skill correspondence courses, free to the incarcerated. Your monies are going to the Department of Corrections for workshops, training, and yet their volunteer director or directors in the penal system send emails out to organizations to go in to do volunteer work in workshops. They send emails around letting the volunteers know what they're looking for. They may be looking for an imam to run the Islamic program. And then they're looking for people to work with the women in volunteer programs. They're looking for people to do work with religions, other religions. They're looking for people to run workshops involving educational workshops. They're getting volunteers, but yet they're getting monies in their budget to hire people to do such things. There has to be oversight of the Department of Corrections around the country. There has to be oversight, because we need to find out why there's such a high rate of suicides in the penal system. We need to find out why people are not showing any progress while being inside, not showing that they're participating in work programs or school programs. People will automatically assume, oh, they're not doing it because they didn't try. They don't care. That shows how ignorant our society is. If they're not showing anything, find out from them. Ask them. Throughout the years, we've had thousands of applications, and I composed these applications to ask all these questions. I ask them for their name, their race. I ask them for their age. I ask them if they're high school graduates, college graduates, students. I ask them if there's an alcohol problem in their family, a drug problem. I ask them if they have other relatives incarcerated. I ask them if they're receiving any treatment, psychological treatment, medical treatment. Have they participated in any programs? And this is where it gets interesting. Because the many that have applied when asking, denied or approved, a lot of times denied, denied, denied. But yet certain people are not denied. And when it comes to racial, we have clients of all races, including Caucasian, black, brown, red, and beige. And you can tell the difference between who gets a lot of these programs, who can participate in them, who has it easier in comparison to the others. So when I speak, I know what I'm talking about. It's like religion. I study religion. I study races. When I speak, I know what I'm talking about because I don't just study it. I get involved in it. And as I said before, I've been in almost every Christian church. I've been in a mosque. I've been in a synagogue. I've been in Baptist, Pentecostal, Catholic, Episcopal, Seventh-day Adventist. I've been in a lot of them. So I know what I'm saying. I'm twice, maybe three times the age of many of you. And I tell it like it is. I don't have to lie. I don't have to make up stories. Because I'm in the real world. I'm in the real world, a dysfunctional world. I see a lot. I've been through a lot. I know a lot. And people focus too much on what's happened to them in the past, what's happened to their loved ones. What they need to focus on is coming together to finally try to make some changes, some positive changes. There's a lot of prisoners out there. I feel so bad because their families are out there. Their families are doing nothing, absolutely nothing, but complaining, joining groups to get pity, joining groups to complain, checking off like when somebody posts something. Do more than that. Share the articles. Let it go viral. Everything you get, make sure it goes viral. Do some research. Find out about these prisons and what they're doing. You just need to go on the internet, type it like you're writing on a piece of paper. Drugs being smuggled in by guards. Abuses by guards. Prisons being targeted. But also do research for pro bono criminal justice lawyers, or pro bono criminal lawyers, pro bono appellate lawyers, pro bono civil rights lawyers, pro bono post-conviction, anything. Just do research on anything and then save it. Send it out to everybody you know of on Facebook, on your groups, your advocacy groups. I don't care what state it's in because there's people all over the world, all over the country that are on Facebook. Many of them in your groups are from different states. When petitions are filed, I don't care what state it's filed in, sign it. If it has anything to do with prison reform, if it has anything to do with abolishing life sentences, if it has anything to do with abolishing solitary confinement or restrictive housing units, you can be in California, sign a Florida petition, because it's numbers we need. It's true advocates we need. It's people that we need to show your own loved ones that you're not just sitting back while they're suffering, You're not just waiting for somebody else to solve your problem or solve their problem. Because if you are, it won't get solved. Again, we live in a country that is so self-centered. A country that's all about themselves, trying to fit in with peers that are not worth anything. Because those peers may have a little bit of money or power or fame. According to the Bible, Jesus came into this world. He could have been anything he wanted to. He could have been the king that he was. But what did he do? He came in with sandals. He told somebody that wanted to follow him, he didn't even have a place to lay his head. He stayed wherever he was invited to stay, wherever he was at the time. This was somebody that brought himself lower than a homeless shelter person. A homeless person. And here we have people that are not even close to what he was about, that are so gung-ho, so focused on themselves. It is so pitiful. It really, really is pitiful. It doesn't hurt to be humble. It doesn't hurt to be you, but be yourself. Because I know when you're by yourself, and no one's around you, your peers aren't around you, your family's not around you, your work co-workers, nobody's around you. I know you act totally different than you act when you're around them. I know you really let your hair down when you're by yourself and you don't have to put on any airs. It's a good feeling, isn't it? So why have to put on airs when you're around people? You ever watch the news when you have all these young journalists, all these young media people just talking the same way, acting the same way, giggling the same way, doing everything the same way, like little kids in school? But yet, when it comes to talking about serious issues, still acting childish, they report one-sided news. They don't try to find out what caused the person to do something. They don't try to find out from the opposite side. They take one-sided stories, whether it be from law enforcement, whether it be from a victim, whether it be from a stranger that saw something. Whatever it is, they're taking all this information they're getting from one side and then blowing it way out of proportion, without even talking to the person that's being accused. That's how so much injustice occurs. That's how so many people get put in prison on wrongful convictions, and many of whom are still in prison after 30, 40, 50 years, because unfortunately, there's not enough Barry Shecks in the world. There's not enough innocence projects in the world. It's sad, because if there were, I'm sure that a lot of people wrongfully convicted would be out by now. And those who did commit crimes, they're made to look their worst. Did you know, when they doctor something up to show the pictures of a lot of incarcerated individuals, they doctor it up to make that person look 10 times worse than the person really actually looks. They don't have smiles on their face. They put their clothes, make their clothes a little raggedy looking to make them look like they're about nothing. They kind of like make their faces look mean. I know. I've experienced it personally, seen it. Some families can't even recognize their loved ones when they doctor it up on the media. They can't even recognize their loved ones. And the loved ones can't even understand why it was put in there like that. It's sad that we have to go through so much, and it's sad that we have to see so many others go through so much. And if we just put our feet in someone else's shoe, then maybe we can understand the pain, sorrow, and suffering they're going through. And many of you are going through the same. Many of you are going through the same thing, but because it's happening to you, instead of you trying to understand the other person, why while you're both going through it, you choose to say, well, yeah, I'm not as bad as that person. Oh, no, my loved one, no, my loved one's fine. We're not like that person. We're not, you know, it's like the poor lady and the rich man in the church both praying, and the rich man is talking about all that he put into the church. He put all this into the church, like God owes him something. And he's pointing to that poor woman, and he's saying, I don't want to be like her. Thank God I'm not like her. When that woman is sincerely praying, crying, praying to God to forgive her for any sins that she may have committed. But this person with money, he thought he was too good to even consider the fact that maybe that woman was going to be accepted by God, and he would not be. So for you out there that think that you want to be better than someone else, or your situation is much better, or your situation is the only situation that matters, no, put it aside. I advocate for my loved one. I advocate for everyone else's loved one that I see having to endure injustice in this country, having to endure unnecessary racism, having to be looked down upon when they are more of a man or a woman than many of you out there with power, with money, with peers you'd rather be around, peers that are just as so corrupt, so deceptive, so full of lies, using people who you're walking with, because there's going to be a day when we are all going to be going before our Maker. And he didn't come into this world to save the righteous. He came into this world to save the sinners. And once those sinners are saved, the righteous have to be looked at, because many people have stumbled because of the so-called righteous that do nothing but judge. So I want to thank you for being on. And if any of you know of any situations in any of the prisons across the country where there has been inappropriate surgical treatment, intentional surgical treatment damaging someone long-term or permanently, please let me know, or please call into the show the next time we have a show going and let us know, because we need to start focusing on these issues of malpractices, not to sue but to stop, not to sue but to prevent somebody else from going through a lot of this damage that has been done to a lot of incarcerated people unnecessarily. So I thank you all for being on. I thank you for listening. Again, Kelly talked very, very quickly, so he was really unable to get everything in that he wanted to get in, but he was able to get a lot more in than he would have if he didn't talk fast. So again, write Kelly, write him, and he will tell you more about what he's going through and what others are going through, even in the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, which is a commonwealth as it is in Massachusetts. But with the new elections, let's hope that our new legislative members who have won in these campaigns, let us hope and pray that they will do something positive that our previous government officials did not do. Again, thank you all for listening in. And hopefully you will be calling in on Tuesday. Every Tuesday I have the show from 12 to 1. To allow anyone and everyone to call in to talk about any issues that you feel comfortable with, that you want to let the audience know about, that you want to bring awareness of, call in Tuesdays 12 to 1 at 657-383-1630, and that is 1 p.m. 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Every Tuesday you have a voice. Thank you so much.